Thomas Lund started his professional career as a musician and recording engineer. From 1985 to 1992, he studied medicine at University of Aarhus, Denmark, specializing in perception and statistics. Mr. Lund joined TC Electronics in 1994 and has been responsible for the development of new technology in areas such as reverb, mastering, true peak level and loudness. His current position is HD Development Manager. Thomas has published around 30 scientific papers, mainly about loudness distortion in digital audio and spatialization for AES, EBU, SMPTE, BCA, and NAB. Wow. And has taken part in international audio standardization work with AES, ITU, and EBU. On a side note, Thomas spent kindergarten and first grade at Sherwood Hills School here in Madison. Please welcome Thomas Lund.
Thanks. Thank you for that. So I'm from the development department, so I won't really be talking about TC products or anything, but I'll be talking about general technology and about these new loudness standards. So, just a very brief line check here if we have audio.
We're getting us ready to make way.
So this is about average level. Okay. I'll be using a few audio examples in the presentation, so we just wanted to make sure everything was set up. So this is what I'm going to talk about, the revised ITU standard and how it relates to ATSC 85 and the CARM Act. So I'll first very briefly talk about the loudness wars, which we have experienced horrible in the music industry for years. Then I'll talk about BS 1770-2, some of the new extra tools that have been developed for that, and finally some conclusions. So this is where we're at right now, or until recently at least, before the new loudness standards. As you can see, we were using a peak level measure to normalize programs or to judge programs. So in this case, for instance, the items here to your right, hyper-compressed pop rock or broadcast commercials, were systematically much louder than, for instance, average broadcast or classical music or cinema movies. So we want to get away from this peak level obsession. And one of the other things that's bad about how the music industry has used peak level detection is that we have been measuring sample by sample, which is a completely dysfunctional measure. And that's corrected also in the new standards. So let me just very briefly explain what all this is about. Because even in a digital signal, and we have two examples here, you can see the red dots represent the sample positions, and the black curve is the reconstructed analog curve. So if you're measuring the sample positions in example number one, you see that the samples occasionally at least align with the sine wave here. So by reading the digital sample, you'd also know the peak level of that sine wave. But even a sine wave can easily be constructed, so analog and digital level never aligns. This is example number two. So you can see in this case, it could go on forever, but the digital level, this is a perfectly legal sine wave. The digital level would not go to full scale, but you would still have the same analog level out of this one as up here. So what has happened over the last 15 years is that people have used processors to push the digital level to full scale all of the time, and they're running into an area which the reproduction devices weren't designed for reproducing at all. So for instance, CD players distort, and I'll have you give you an example of that, but not only CD players, data reduction systems, sample rate converters, and basically all kinds of D2A converters exhibit this also. First, let me give you a brief, I'll play a little bit of an Anastasia pop song, and afterwards we will hear how much an NAD CD player actually adds of distortion to this particular track because of the abuse of mastering levels. So try to remember the level here, because afterwards I'll play just what is added, what distortion is added in a particular CD player.
Ha ha!
Okay, I'll spare you for more, but this is just a very elementary way of listening to what distortion arises in this particular CD player. The red CD here is the Anastasia one I played for you. We are discarding the right track, and we're burning a new white one here, where we have one track at its original level and the same track reduced by 6 dB. So we put it into the NAD CD player and lower the output that was at full level by 6 dB and inverse them, and then we listen to the result. So now if the only difference between these two outputs is the 6 dB level difference, we will hear nothing. But for instance, if there's distortion on this output and not on that output, we can hear it straight away. So listen to the distortion this particular CD player actually adds. Yeah, I think you get the picture. So that's around like 10 or 15% of distortion you can easily add this way, just because we are sort of exploiting the digital system in music production. So we need headroom several places, as it says here. And unfortunately, this type of level, we call it 0 dB FS plus level, is created more and more frequently in new pop rock releases. And if you play, for instance, Anastasia or another pop CD with that type of level, you actually get peaking through a data reduction system. So this is what we would normally call MP3 here. So for instance, MP3 at 128 kilobits per second would need a headroom of 3 to 5 dB. You should keep the level 3 to 5 dB from full scale in order not to overload this particular codec if you're playing back bad stuff like the Anastasia album. So generally, what we can say about data reduction is that we shouldn't rely on it, at least not before transmission. We know that bandwidth doubles in every 20 months, so we've had, like, since 1995, maybe a 600-fold increase in bandwidth. So internally in your station, I would just advise you not to rely on data reduction at all. You're risking both audio quality and compatibility in the future. Also, you should be aware that if you're ripping music to your station archives, then you're actually importing distortion right into the archives for the very same reason. So I know you're mostly TV engineers here, which is good, because I'm bashing a little bit here on the low bit rates of digital radio. Dolby AC3 isn't that bad in this respect. But what I've heard over the last couple of days driving around Madison and listening to XM radio, that's horrible. So hopefully TV won't go that route with very low bitrate codecs. So let's look at BS1770-2 and some of the buzzwords here, because some of these words are creating confusion right now around the world. First of all, we should realize that BS1770-2 also includes a much better way of detecting peak level than the old sample peak detection system, which is flawed, basically. So the true peak level detection system, which is in BS1770-2, this is an upsample system that can actually tell you if you're going into the, I could call it red light district I showed you before, the type of level that will create downstream distortion. So the only thing to be aware of is that the true peak meter should not have sample rate converters on its inputs, because if they're there, of course, it won't be able to show that type of level in the first place. So we want to get away, basically, from measuring peak level to measuring loudness. So true peak, the only reason for having a true peak is not to set the level, it's to make sure you're not overloading. So your main focus should not be on true peak. Only if you get red lights, you should turn your attention to true peak level. Your main attention should be to loudness instead. Because we want to get away from this, we want to get away from the peak level obsession and start normalizing based on loudness. In the US, you have chosen minus 24 as your center of the universe, which means that, for instance, a pop rock track would not use very much headroom, while, for instance, classical music or normal broadcasts would have more peak headroom, and a cinema movie a lot more peak headroom. But this is a very a much better condition for between genres, for instance, to normalize audio. So when we are talking about loudness, a few things we want to make clear, that it's a subjective thing, so we all hear things differently. But these things are common for all people, sound pressure level, the frequency contents, and the duration of the sounds. But then we must accept that there's a variability between listeners. It can depend on our sex, on our culture, things like that, on our age. But there's also a difference within ourselves, depending on our mood and our focus, for instance. If we had a lot of slits the night before or something like that, we'll hear things differently. So there's also variation in reproduction equipment. And finally, the conclusion here is that a loudness measure must be based on quite solid statistics. We did tests together with McGill University in Montreal, and I'll just show you briefly the results from that. The good models are to your left, and the poorer models are to your right. So you can see, for instance, the one that is used in the ITU standard has a standard subjective deviation of 0.8 dB, which is very good. So this is much better, for instance, than if you're using LEQA, which is all over the place over here, for instance, or many of the other measures. So basically, we have a very good measure, and it's actually quite hard to beat. Even for an experienced engineer, when you're trying this, I can tell you that you might be able to beat it for the first 15 minutes every day, but the rest of the day, the measure will beat you. So it is actually quite good. And I'm not trying to sell anything. It's open standard. This, I'm just promoting a much better way of aligning audio than what we had before. This is the frequency weighting that goes into the standard, uses the blue line with this shelving filter and then the green line down here. These are A, B, and C weighting curves here you might know already. And this is the loudness model, the shelving filter, the low-cut filter. It measures the power of each channel and sums them that way with a little bit of difference between the fronts and the rears, and the LFE is not part of the measurement. It works for mono, stereo, and 5.1. So some words here. These are some of the confusing things, especially between the US and Europe and the rest of the world right now, because we're using the same, we're talking about the same thing, but we're using a different term. You should be aware that LUFS is precisely the same as LKFS. It's in both cases a measure of absolute loudness. You can compare it with how we're using the BFS for level. So you have sort of a zero at the top, and then you have negative numbers going down. So minus 24 LUFS is precisely the same as minus 24 LKFS. It's basically a thing about ISO standards and, you know, units and all that. But no big deal. It's if you have a meter that shows LKFS, it's the same as a meter that shows LUFS. On the other hand, an LU meter is different because we are now on a relative scale, and you can compare here with the B for level. So you need to set a target level to be able to talk about zero LU, because target level is zero LU. So have a look at this graphics, for instance. In this case, we are calling minus 23 for zero LU. This is what we're doing in Europe currently. So you can see we can have LU shown on a meter, or we could have LUFS shown on the meter, the same as LKFS. Let me show you a brief example of how it could look on a meter. This is one of our meters, but it could be any meter relating using these terms. It should be the same result you're getting. So a little Monty Python sketch here on the LUFS scale.
On the 28th day of May, you published this phrase book.
I did.
I quote an example. The Hungarian phrase meaning, can you direct me to the station, is translated by the English phrase, please fondle my bum.
So that was on the LUFS meter, and as you can see, I put in this case minus 23 up here because that's typical for European readings, but it could have been minus 24 as well. It makes no difference. It's just a question of your target level. But let's look at how the same sketch would unfold on an LU meter.
On the 28th day of May, you published this phrase book.
I did.
I quote an example. The Hungarian phrase meaning, "Can you direct me to the station?" is translated by the English phrase, "Please fondle my bum."
So here you can see that it's a question of your own preference as a production engineer if you want to look at numbers like this or numbers like that. So here you'd know that you're actually 0.6 dB too soft on the average, while you over here, if you're using minus 23 as your target, while over here you need to do the calculations inside your head. In some countries it seems that engineers prefer this way, and in other countries that way. But it's the same measure they're using, it's just a question of how it's presented. So we're actually using this measure, the program loudness measure, to be able to offset one program against another one. For instance, if we have a program that measures minus 28 LKFS or LUFS, and our target is minus 23, we know that we can just use a static gain correction of plus 5 dB, and that program will now be on target. Of course, if you're using minus 24 as your target, then you'd only apply 4 dB of gain here. So some of you may have followed this discussion and know that there's now a gate in the BS7070-2. So why are we doing that? It's actually because this is better across genres. It's very difficult to align, for instance, a speech-based program with a music-based program, a commercial against classical music, things like that, without a very transparent way of doing it. And that's what the gate helps you. So if you found out that a relative gate between minus 6 and minus 10 was significantly better than what we had before, and this was confirmed by Japanese, both the national broadcaster and the Organization of Commercial Broadcasters in Japan, and finally CRC in Canada said the same thing. So that's sort of the why the gate went into BS1770-2. So what does it mean? It actually doesn't mean anything if you have a very narrow loudness range program like a news speaker. In this case, there's a blue line, or a green line and a red line here, and you can see they're almost on top of each other. So you get the same number out regardless if you're gating or not gating. But if we're taking a medium loudness range program, like an episode of Friends, for instance, you can see that the two lines are now coming a bit apart, and it would make a little bit of difference, around 1 dB of difference, whether you're using the gated or the ungated measure. So finally, if we are taking a feature film, which is an example of a wide loudness range program, this is The Matrix, then you can see we have now around 4 dB of difference. So that would be more significant here. So this is much better than what we had before, even though I know that speech detection seems like a pretty idea. It doesn't work in the real life. And for many years, it has been promoted because also it was patent protected, and the company patent protecting it wanted it to be the foundation of international standards. So, but it's too simplistic, basically. You can't use speech detection across all programs. Let me just give you an example here of four programs that are all normalized using speech detection at minus 24, which are the ATSC A85 rules.
You're here because you know something. What you know you can't explain, but you feel it. You felt it your entire life, that there's something wrong with the world. You don't know what it is, but it's there, like a splinter in your mind, driving you mad.
Guten Abend.
Buenas noches.
Dobre vece.
Bonsoir.
Buonasera.
Dobre dien.
Ah, good day.
Oh, wow, where are we?
What you doing?
Oh, deciding what to wear. My first day back to work. Do I look fat in this?
I think you look good in everything.
Wow, your father has taught you well.
Dad, this is the best part, come on!
Oh, turn it off
now. No, this is the, I want to listen to it, okay?
Right. Too late? Sure. Eat this.
So So it's very easy to find examples where speech normalization doesn't work. And that's one of the reasons why the new tools in the BS1770 and the EBU group were proposed. So let me talk about some of those new tools that are based on open standards. There's now harmonized metering possible, which means that if you have a meter where it says EBU mode on it, you should be able to at least be sure that certain parameters are measured the same way. There's program loudness, which can be abbreviated by the letter I. That's the loudness of the full program. It's the same as in BS1770-2. Then there's momentary loudness, which is a 400 millisecond measure of loudness, abbreviated by the letter M. Short-term loudness, 3 seconds, abbreviated by S. And finally, loudness range, which tells you the variation of the program, the loudness variations inside a program. So for instance, a commercial would typically be very, very narrow loudness range, while classical music, drama, or film would be wider loudness range. So this is an example of the EBU parameters shown on a meter like ours, for instance. But this is just an example. Other meters could show these measurements in different ways.
I will not buy this record. It is scratched. Sorry? I will not buy this record. It is scratched.
No. This tobacconist's.
I will not buy this tobacconist's. It is scratched.
No. Tobacco. Cigarettes.
Yeah. Cigarette. My hovercraft is full of eels. My hovercraft is full of eels.
Matches.
So you could present the measurements like this or in other ways, of course, also. So a few words about loudness range, because that has proven a very useful measurement for production engineers especially. For instance, if you get the measure 10 LU of a certain program, then you know that you would need a fader ride of approximately plus minus 5 dB over the duration of the program if you wanted to keep the loudness constant. Not that you want to do it, it's just a measure of how much it varies inside the program. So it can be used in your delivery specifications to settle expectations early. You shouldn't try to produce FM radio types of programs, not necessarily at least, and you shouldn't necessarily try to produce a cinema movie either, because you're in broadcast. So it also predicts if a program fits a certain requirement of the user, for instance, if processing is needed for a certain platform. And finally, you can use it as what we call fingerprinting to make sure that the signal path downstream of the studio is transparent, because this measure stays the same regardless if you're renormalizing the program. So if you're just boosting the program or attenuating it by 5 or 3 or 10 dB, loudness range stays the same. It's only the moment you start processing, for instance, in a station processor, in distribution, in the Dolby codec, wherever you have processing that could happen, then the number will start changing. And it's actually been one of the places where we've shown to some of the mixing engineers, for instance, at Universal, that there's almost constantly processing happening in AC3. So what they're doing in the studio, 99% of the listeners will not hear the same thing because there will be DRC applied to the signal. So these are some of the loudness ranges we are suggesting right now. If you're on digital television, you probably shouldn't exceed 20 on a regular basis. Analog television like this, and car radio maybe like this. So these are just guidelines. It's not set in stone. It's just something you could start working with. Notice how different cinema is from any of the other conditions we normally have in broadcast. You might be following this already if you're following the EBU group on the internet, on the mailing list. IRT in Germany, Institute for Rundfunktechnik in Munich, they have made a no-tube project, which is a way of trying to find out how can broadcasters simulcast to other platforms, for instance, the internet or mobile platforms. And there's a loudness evaluation actually going on right now, as you can see, where they're using precisely the loudness range parameter to find out what people prefer when listening under mobile conditions, for instance, or on the internet. There's also an interesting issue here of how much loudness jump we can tolerate between programs. Loudness range is about loudness changes inside one program. In 2008, there was an AES paper called the Comfort Zone paper, but the problem with that was that it was only measuring speech, so it took one program and the next program and measured the speech level in the two programs and didn't observe anything else. So regardless of dinosaurs walking through walls or explosions, whatever, it was only the speech level that counted. It was also not based on BS1770 when measuring these segments. So we did a new experiment in an AES paper from a couple of years ago, now based on BS1770, where we included commercials and music and movies and measured all sources. And I won't go into too much detail, but we had plenty of tests with mostly speech and many with mostly music and effects. And the results were quite revealing that already for a systematic increase of loudness between two programs of 3 LU, which is 3 dB on the average, you could expect 50% of your viewers or listeners will start adjusting their remote. It had to decrease the level by 6 LU or 6 dB on the average for the same to happen, and nearly all of your listeners would start increasing or turning the loudness volume down for an increase of 5 LU or for a decrease of 8 LU. And any type of sound could actually trigger this desire to adjust the level. So if we turn to the CALM Act for a moment, of course it's very important that it's transparent how you normalize. Otherwise, you'd have either problems with the advertiser or the broadcaster. So if we're using an ungated measure, that's actually not very good, or it can be exploited quite easily. So let me show you an example of a commercial here using the old ungated measure. So you can see in this case that the program loudness is measured to -24.1, which would be fine for normal broadcast criteria. But if we use the gated measure, you will see a different picture. So in this case, you can see we're now measuring, we're using the same loudness model, it's just a question of using gating or not, that we are now measuring it 10 dB louder because we're focusing on the very loud part of it. So we actually, in this case, we have one commercial and two quite different results, the results depending on if we're using the original BS1770 measure or the gated version over here. So a few more details about gated or not gated, because right now, as I'll get back to, it's really unsettled what ATSC is recommending. So this is the old BS1770 over here, which is ungated, so it includes silence. So for instance, if you start the measurement like 5 seconds before the program and finish the measurement 10 seconds after, you will have integrated 15 seconds of complete silence into the measurement, and it will not be taken out of the measure. So it depends on when you start and when you finish the program in this case. So it includes even silence, while this one focuses on foreground sound. So this is quite application critical because you it's difficult to reproduce the same results twice because it's difficult to start and stop the meter precisely. While this one, you don't have that problem. This one over here is cross-genre critical. That's what different EBU and the Japanese and CRC guys found out, while this one is much more cross-genre friendly. You can expect, though, to get similar numbers with narrow loudness range programs, regardless if you're using the ungated or the gated measure, where you should expect to have quite different numbers if you're playing wide loudness range programs, like I showed you before with the matrix example. So where's ATSC right now? This is the latest update of A85 from July this year. And it's a little bit discouraging to see this sentence in the references section, because this is not normally what you put into scientific papers, that users are encouraged to investigate the possibility of applying the most recent edition of the reference document. And you can see BS1770-1 is way past its time, but it's still being referenced in the ATSC document. So it's a little bit unclear if A85 is actually taking advantage of gating or not at this point in time. So this is another way where the new tools actually could help you here with the complying with the CALM Act. This is actually a procedure used in Britain now for 3 years. They're using the 3-second sliding window that's also part of the EBU tools across the commercial. So for instance, this is an example where we have a commercial where its average level is measured to minus 24. But if we now use this sliding window approach across the commercial, then maybe we find out this way that the maximum using that sliding window approach is up here instead. And we could say that our maximum, the only thing we would ever allow was that the 3-second sliding window should not exceed minus 20. So now we know we shouldn't normalize it to the average level, but instead normalize it to the sliding window level. So again, this is what they've been using with great results in Britain for a while, and the tools are already in the EBU standard. So this would be a great place also for legislators in the US to start, because we know that it works. Finally, a conclusion here. Quite a few items, actually, I should say. Production guidelines first. Speech, regular speech, you should produce it so it measures in this interval between minus 27 and minus 23. Music, a little bit louder, so in this interval, that would be the natural thing to do. Loudness range, if you want to use the parameter, it's not that you absolutely must, but if you want to use it, it can be used to get expectations cleared early in the process, and it can be a help for both production and transmission engineers. True peak level in production should never go above minus 1 dB true peak. We don't want to create the mess that's happening right now in the music industry. Then you should also note that you may need to lower it further for transmission, because, for instance, especially if you're transmitting 5.1 AC3, then it's not robust against downmix overloads. So you might want to have the true peaks coming further down, maybe to even down to minus 4 or minus 6, not because of the codec itself, but because it's prone to overload if the end user switches in downmix. This is an example of one of our meters. If you're using it in production, you can tell the engineers to stay between these two lines in general. This is an excerpt from the Pirates movie, and you can see that it's much softer and much louder at occasions, so this would not be your typical broadcast program. Live metering, this is an interesting subject because we were a little bit worried to start with, which was like a couple of years ago, if engineers would be able to work with these types of meters for live. But it's proven easier for most, even experienced engineers, than using peak or VU, and it's certainly much, much easier if you're a video editor or if you're a journalist. But even, as I said, experienced engineers are helped by this. So it seems like the best principle is actually, in this case, not to look at loudness range and program loudness, which I showed you before, but at a sliding measure of loudness combined with program loudness. I will show you an example of this momentarily. A good idea is to start with your program maybe one LU below target. So in the US, you would maybe start focusing on minus 25. And at the end of the program, you could bring it up. It's very depressing to have to bring it down at the end. So it's better to start a little bit on the safe side. Use your ears. That's certainly the main advice. And remember that the peak meters, the true peak meters, are only there to prevent overload and move up to target at the end. This is an example of a bicycle race from the Olympics, actually. So you can see we're actually now starting 8 minutes into the program, and program loudness over here won't change very much. You need very wild things to happen before this number changes. This one, on the other hand, tells you the last, you could call it the local loudness, the last 6 second loudness. So you can see this one will go up and down depending on if you have background noise or if you have commentary. And you can actually quite easily see the level of the background noise compared to the level of the commentary. So, as I said, for live production engineers or live engineers, it might be more interesting to look at this number rather than the loudness range, at least most of the time.
Trix Siborak, der sidder og kører alt ind lige nu for tyskerne.
Sorry, it's Danish.
Og Judith Arndt på spring.
Longo sidder der altså stadig. Og det tynder altså ud i rækkerne, stille og roligt.
Yeah, I think you get the idea that you can easily tell here, you can see it on the radar, that the difference between commentary and background is around maybe 8 or something like that, from minus 24 down to minus 20, 32 or 33 or something like that. And you could see the same thing on the numbers over here. So where do we want to normalize now? Back to not production anymore, but to what you want to do with the finished program. Do we want to do it at the station or using metadata? EBU recommends doing it at the station. It's one less thing to go wrong. It's a benefit to multiple platforms. It's more predictable than using metadata. It gives you a lower workload at the stations, and it's cheaper. So that, this is the principle here, that we want to normalize everything first. This is your production where you're centered around the zero LU target, which would be minus 24. Maybe AC3 transmission, you bring down the peak level a little bit to make sure that you're not overloading the codec and making sure that you can downmix at the consumer without distortion. But for the analog platform and the mobile platforms, you also bring up low-level stuff. You don't bring up everything doing the local radio approach and just pressing everything up against full scale. No, you're only lifting the stuff that's too soft for the analog TV here or for the mobile platforms here. And then you're probably also restricting the peaks a little bit. Now comes a little bit different topic for those of you that might already be outputting for iPod platforms or mobile platforms, because you should realize that minus 24 is too low for the gain structure, for instance, in Apple devices. This is an investigation we did recently to find out what Soundcheck, for instance, in iTunes aims for, because that's where the gain structure in the Apple systems is, that's what it expects as the average level. So if you're using BS1770-2, you can see here that for Apple platforms, you should aim at minus 16.5 rather than minus 24 or minus 23, because otherwise you may run out of gain for the guy who wants to listen to the program on the subway or wherever. If you are not using gating, this would be the measure that iTunes aims at. But the main thing here, you should note this number around minus 16.5. That means, again, if you remember the diagram I showed you before, where you have your HD production, you're bringing up low-level stuff, you're bringing down the peaks, then it's also a good idea at the end to renormalize everything. This is just a simple gain process because you took care of every, making sure that you got good audio quality, bringing up low-level stuff around the minus 24 mark here. Now you, at the end, can renormalize to minus 16 or minus 15, whatever you want to, by just adding some gain, making sure, of course, that you're not going above or getting too close to zero with the limitations you have applied upstream. So that is a very, very easy and very sound-friendly and effective way of dealing with simulcast to mobile platforms. How do we get the best out of AC3? As I said, normalize programs at the station using the new BS1770 measure. Protect AC3 from overload. Change metadata only when switching between stereo and 5.1. Use minus 24 as your dial norm setting all of the time. Also note that the AC3 decoder is completely ignorant of the speech level. The dial norm, even though it's called something with dialogue, it's actually just telling the decoder the average level of the program. It's got nothing to do whatsoever with dialogue. So this is typically, this is probably what you have seen from Dolby presentations, many places where you could put in boxes to encode and decode, going to Dolby E, going out of Dolby E, taking things like that, making sure that your metadata is correct all along the station path, and finally encoding again at the end, changing from Dolby E to AC3, and having this floating metadata approach. But I think it's only half a solution for one platform, as I told you before. And I think that the EBU recommendation is much wiser, also from a cost point of view. You should use a fixed target at minus 23 or minus 24. If you have Dolby E going into the system, make it into linear as quickly as possible. And also note that on the server, you can do these things. It's trivial to renormalize on the server. Maybe you don't have so many different servers right now that can do it, but I know at least Harris has a server that can normalize based on BS1770, and I'm sure that more servers will come along also. Then at the end, you just use a Dolby encoder here, statically set at minus 24, and you can treat the other platforms, as I told you before, because everything is aligned around the minus 24 mark upstream. So now would you say, are we hurting the audio by normalizing it? No, not at all. Broadcast is not cinema, and picture is already modified heavily. Even a feature film transmitted on an HD channel is modified heavily. We just heard the speaker before me talking about color space, there's aspect ratios. There are many different things where the picture is modified to suit domestic conditions. Of course, you should do the same thing with the audio. Not over process at all, of course not, but just make it best possibly. And if you normalize at the station, you're like 90% of the way. It's very unpredictable, and it can be very expensive, as I showed you, not to normalize at the station. And with minus 24, you should note that you have an immense amount of headroom compared to ever before in broadcast. You can actually transmit the full Matrix movie or Bolero classical Ravel piece without processing at all within these conditions. Logging, you could use the same type of processing, thereby creating a loop from production over ingest to transmission and logging, making sure that you're doing the same measurement through the chain. So for instance, here you can bring out program statistics or have red markers if programs become too loud, things like that. It's very easy to do just using the same measurement all the way, and all the tools are there already. A family photo here from Rome. We did a loudness seminar recently in Rome, and just wanted to show you that this is actually gaining tremendously ground now in Europe and many places in the world, I hope also in the US, and I hope that this delay of giving you the needed tools won't delay it too much, but hopefully ATSC will get up in pace soon. Oh, sorry. I thought it was this mic. I'll warn you next time. So this is Florian Kammerer and Richard van Everding in here. Some of the guys who did the EBU tech standards. I have another one coming. Okay, so a good thing is that we have a global understanding, I think, that we should focus on loudness instead of peak level. A85 right now is too focused on HDTV, in my opinion, and the anchor approach for wide loudness range programming is not that efficient from a broadcaster's point of view. Too much hands-on time, in my opinion. It's got very good monitoring guidelines, so you can set up calibrated listening, which is actually essential for having good results across studios. And if you need a manual for AC3, you also got it there. R128, on the other hand, is an all-platform solution, and you can use the same number across these platforms. It includes distribution guidelines, is based completely on open standards, has the harmonized metering aspects, and the tools to tame the commercials. So all in all, I would say that the standard, the BS1770-2 and R128, is better at controlling commercials and wide loudness range content and at setting metadata than if you base your measurement on speech or peak level. It also enables very predictable and transparent normalization across your platforms, and you don't use any proprietary technology. You can run it on a server, and you have harmonized metering, so it's bound to be cheaper in the long run. For those of you who might go to New York, I want to show you this brief slide, because this is, I know this is a little bit on more on the music side, but this will be a very interesting workshop, because all of these new tools also mean that we're promoting to the music industry to lower the levels and get a nice and respectable headroom back into music. That will be make a big, big change. And I think it will be a very interesting panel here with the two Bobs and Susan and John from a consumer angle here. So if you're in New York, I can only recommend this one. So to finish you off with a frightening example of where the music industry is today, some ugly CD examples. Normally, before you saw that I was using minus 23 or minus 24 up here, but for music CDs, I actually have to use an insanely high number here, like minus 6. So this is where typical pop CDs are. So I won't reset the radar over here now. You'll see these four tracks, or briefly here. And this one will measure the loudness of each track. And I'll put them down here so you can see what they actually measure on this new scale, where the music industry is today. Men. So when was the last time you thought that full-scale pink noise was a relief? So you can see Metallica actually beats full-scale Pink Noise by almost 6 dB here. It's completely crazy. So, but that's where we're at in the music industry, and we don't want that to spread to broadcast. Certainly not. So these are some of the references I've been using here, and especially, of course, the ITU documents and the EBU, HSC and EBU tech documents. I could recommend that. There's a glossary that we are trying to keep updated at our website. I gave IRT, Institute for Rundfunktechnik, the NoTube project, a prod here. This is the website. And these are some of the panels at AES in New York. So that concludes what I had to say. Thanks for listening, and I'd be happy to try to answer questions if you have some.
Hello? Okay. Since I have the microphone, I'll take the first question. You referenced your 2009 paper with the studies on people responding to different loudness. Was that with or without video attached?
That was without video attached. But this this project IRT is doing right now, it's a good question because it could make a difference. This one is with video, so you should try to go to the website and see what they're doing. It's quite neat.
Okay, thank you.
You were referencing the gating used in making the measurements. How wide a gate is that? How much time is that?
The gate is relative. So this means that it's actually, if you have a program where you have, for instance, a half an hour program, then the gate will, at the end of the program, it would know the average level of the program, and it will discard everything that was 10 LU lower than that average. So it's a quite clever measure. It's not, if you see what I mean, you don't have to, if it was a static gate, you would have to remeasure the program after the offset, because then different things will come out and in of the gating window. But it's relative, so it actually uses the program to set the gate, if you see what I mean. It's that. So you don't need two passes. One pass is enough. Did that make sense? Or not really?
I'm working on it.
Okay. Thanks.